Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Colin Murphy, and I'm the deputy editor of the Far Eastern Economic Review. I'd like to welcome you to the club today. Before we start, just a couple of announcements. Please switch off your phones or put them to silent. Thank you very much. And next week we have an event on Monday night. It's a club dinner with Dominic Narr. Dominic is a young photojournalist and he's based in Kenya. And he will be talking about his work. So that's next Monday night, a club dinner. So today it's with great pleasure that I welcome our two speakers, Aki Ra and Tony Hauser. They will be speaking in turn. First, I would like to start with a short video. Thank you. If I manage to do this. Sorry, 1 second. Here we go. So just while we're about to start this, thank you. This takes a little while to warm up. As you know, Aki Ra has been a child soldier with the Khmer Rouge and then was a member of the Vietnamese army. And in the late 1990s, he took some UN training in demining. And ever since then, he's been involved with demining. Personally, he's done 50,000 demining single-handedly. And he tells me that he estimates that there's at least another 5 million mines that have to be demined in Cambodia alone. So we'll just take a look at some of these images. And then, as I say, Akira will speak, followed by Tony Hauser, who is the renowned Canadian photographer, who is currently exhibiting some of the works related to the landmine museum that Akira is running. And that show continues at the Canadian International School. So I'll just let you watch some of the images. Thank you. going to stop the video here. So, ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Akida. Thank you very much.
Yeah, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Akida from Cambodia. And I would like to tell some of my life story. When I was born in Cambodia, it had a war. And I don't remember my birthday during 1970 that I born. And I am about 40 years old now. And about 5 years old, my parents was killed by the Khmer Rouge. And I stayed with a group of the children in the jungle, like 100 children together. We have 5 old people take care of us. And every month, my friend died with disease, like we have malaria or stomach or headache because very dirty live, sleep in jungle, no good food, and malaria, yeah. And when I was about 10 years old, a lot of war start from Vietnamese come to Cambodia, and Khmer Rouge, they need more civilian people to help them to join army with them to fight the Vietnamese army. And they catch the village people, young boy, girl, and stay with them, and they explain Vietnamese very bad, come to kill Cambodian people, come to take Cambodia country, and they are like a giant, they are the robber, very bad. Please help the Khmer Rouge. Khmer Rouge is good people, got the country. So I just believe. And I never go to school. So they never explain me the world is different country. We have like Hong Kong people, and French, English, American, Canada, big nose, or different language, or I don't know like that. I only think every Vietnam different. It's same me, sleep in jungle, fighting, kill people like that. No different. And they teach is the real gun, real mind. And I learned first time to have the gun. I am very happy to play with gun, to use landmine in that time. And my friend, they blow up. When they're learning, they don't understand and mistake and then kill. And that time, I am very sad. I see my friend die. They're learning how to lay landmine and blow up, kill themselves. I want to cry. And my friend, big army, said, no, you don't sad, you don't cry. You can find another friend. Have many more left, not finished. And take him, throw away in the river. Yeah, and after a lot of Vietnamese come to fight, and all me and my friend run away, go to live with the village people. I don't want to fight. I drop the gun away. And Cambodian army with the Vietnamese come to fight the Khmer Rouge. They need more Cambodian civilian people, village people, to join with them army to fight the Khmer Rouge. So they catch me again, all my friends, and to work with them, with the Vietnamese, to fight the Khmer Rouge. I have no choice again. If I say no, I run away, they will shoot me, kill me. So in that time, they give me a lot of mine to lay. They have a lot of mine store. One day I lay 100, sometimes 1,000 landmine, just take safety pin, put in the ground, in the grass, in the water, sometimes on the tree with the trip wire, yeah. And Vietnamese, they explain like Khmer Rouge. They said, Khmer Rouge very bad. Kill your parent. Kill your friend. Don't give you enough food to eat. Please join with Vietnamese kill Khmer Rouge. Khmer Rouge, Vietnamese come to help Cambodian country. It just like that. So sometimes they go to fight over there, have landmine in front. Big army, they understand. They don't want to war in front. They catch me and my friend, few of them, go walk in front, check the mine for me, walk behind you to be safe. If I don't walk in front, they take a stick and hit me. So I check the mine, I have the gun, I look enemy. When I see the mine, I take away, make them walk the same step, be safe. Yeah. Sometimes my friend step on the landmine and injured and killed. Yeah. And one time when I fighting in front of me for 30 meter, I saw Khmer Rouge, and I take the AK, I try to shoot the hand, but I see his face is my ankle. Mostly Khmer Rouge, they are my friend, my ankle, my aunt is Khmer Rouge army, so it's difficult to fight, but I just shoot. Have no choice. And I don't shoot his head, I shoot over the head. I tell him like this, please look me. I don't want to fight. But he don't look to me, he keep busy fighting another, my friend, 10 meter, another. I am in front. So he killed my friend. Another, my friend, Vietnamese said, Akira, kill that man, you saw him in front, you stay near him. Yes, I saw, okay. I shoot one more bullet near his ear, but he still not see many smoke or grass in the jungle. And he said, why? Before you kill easy, one, two bullet in 50-100 meter. Oh, sorry, today I am very headache. I am sick. I cannot see very well. Okay, you go back and take medicine and you rest. Oh, thank you. And I just go back. I don't want to fight because I am not headache, but I don't want to kill my uncle. He's still alive now. He stayed with me at the museum and he helped take care of children and driving. Yeah. And I have the idea from the UN go to help make peace in Cambodia, stop lay land mine, stop fighting. And they call me to help to work with them clear landmine. My first time see the foreigner, I run away because very big UN come with the mustache, big nose, big different. I don't want to stay nearby, but they try to explain. I understand, oh, they are good people. So they said, you have to go to school, you have to learn, you can choose, you can have enough food, non-fighting. Clear landmine. Oh yeah, I like that idea. Okay, good. And I try to learn, I try to read and write, and I have the idea, and I opened the landmine museum in 1997. And I help the children because many of them don't have a leg or arm by landmine, or orphan children, very dirty. I found them many different provinces in Cambodia. And like Mr. Chet, he about 10 years old, he do the baker on the street in Phnom Penh City. He sleep on the street with many children, very dirty. He from Kampong Cham, he lose his family by landmine, anti-tank mine, all die. He alone. And he begged me, please give me some money. I want to have food. I give him some money. And next time he said, can I clean your shoe? I want to have some money. Pay me. I clean your shoe. I give him two shoes to clean. After a few minutes, he take my shoe, run away. Yeah, he like to steal from people. So next day I find him. He he don't want to stand near because he afraid that I hit him. I said, no, come here. I explain you. I give you food. And he come and I explain, would you like to go to school? Stay with me. If you want, I can help. Okay, good, I go. And he come. And now he finished junior high school. He want to be the minor with me. He like the job. So I give him the job. I teach 1 month and he clear landmine every day now. Yeah. I don't know how to talk.
You can give him a rest if you
like. Yeah, let's take a bit of a break.
Give him a rest if you if you like. You have more. Wait. I think he has more. You have more?
A little bit more.
Huh?
Yeah, I clear by myself from 1993 until year 2005. It's 50,000 landmine. Without equipment or protection, helmet or metal detector, I go to clear in the big area with the landmine, and I dig it out and I unscrew, make it safe. Some mine 10 minutes, 20 minutes, and I never injured until now. And now I work for my organization, Cambodia Cell Healthy Mining. I do have the protection helmet and metal detector. I have support from Bill Moss, and I have salary and very much better than before, and very safe, yeah.
And you train the army?
Also, I train the army a lot in Cambodia to demining. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Tony, would you like to tell us a little bit about your involvement with the Landmine Museum?
Yeah, I'd love to do that, and maybe we can run this without sound, Michael, so we don't have me competing with my wife. I actually went to Cambodia in 2005 for the first time to do a project for about HIV/AIDS in Cambodia and in India. And in the end of this project, I wanted to look at the ruins of Angkor Wat and decided it would be interesting. So, on my last day, I was somebody told me I should go to see the Landmine Museum. I'd heard of Akira, but I had no clue what it was, and I said, no, you know what, I don't have time. I can't go to this museum, and I've seen all the museums in town. It's wonderful. And no, they said, Tony, you have to go to the Landmines Museum. So I promised to go, and I went the next morning. My plane was leaving at noon, but I thought, well, I have time to go to this place. And I expected it to be a museum. And I arrived there, and yes, indeed, it was something like a small settlement of a few houses just on the edge of Angkor Wat, somewhere a side road. And there were thousands of landmines on display inside of this compound of houses. And it struck me as quite horrific to see so many landmines. I, of course, being in Cambodia for some time, became aware of landmines, and I saw many landmines injured people in touristy places especially. But what struck me more than the landmines inside of this building or inside this housing complex was some children that were playing soccer outside on a dirt field, and it was children with missing limbs, no legs and one leg missing, and running around on crutches, and a goalie with no hands but two stumps, and catching balls and throwing them back to his players. And I was just totally puzzled by this scene. I had no camera. I looked at this, and with that, a young man came up. Oh, he's seeing some pictures, so that's good. You can look at those while you see. So this young man came up to me and started. Young boy, man, came up and started talking to me and explaining to me that Akira had found him. Like all the other children, living in the countryside with their parents, often, sometimes in very difficult positions or situations, having actually no use to the family economics, because when you can't have missing a leg or a hand, you can't go farming, is what most of these people have to do in order to survive. He suggested maybe they should go to school, but the parents said he can't go to school because the school is too far away and he can't walk to school. And nobody can drive him. There is no vehicle for it. And so he ended up suggesting that they live at the museum. And Akira calls this a museum. It is indeed a museum, but it is actually also a school and a refuge for children and young people with landmines injuries and other injuries that are inflicted by war. So this is what the boy explained to me. And as I was sort of looking at him, I asked him, I said, so Hak was his name, or is his name still. I said, what are you going to do when you're... And I looked at him again, and I thought, well, I better not finish the sentence, and because he looked quite tall and grown up. And he said, you mean when I'm all grown up? And I said, yes. And he said to me, first I want to take care of myself, then I want to take care of my family, and then I want to take care of my country. Well, when I heard that, I actually had somewhat goosebumps. I had never heard any of my children say this. I have three children in Canada, and I have never heard any North American or European child say that to me. And so I said, I have to do something. Somehow I have to help. What can I do? But I'm a photographer. I don't know what to do in this situation other than take pictures. This seems like a lousy thing to do, but that's all I could do. So I said, look, I'm going to run back to my guest house. I'm going to get my camera, and I'm going to take some pictures of you and the people here. And he said, yeah, that's fine. And so I ran back and tried to take pictures. But on the way back, I realized, I don't even know what I'm doing there. I don't know what kind of pictures should I take. I took a few pictures of them playing soccer. There were still some children playing soccer. And I ended up giving up. I said, look, I don't know what to do, and I haven't really got a proper concept. Until I left Cambodia, and I said to the young men, I'm going to come back. I'm going to come back here within a year, and I'm going to make some pictures, proper pictures. I just don't have the time right now. It needs to be a bit more arranged. And so so I came back within a year in 2006 when I finally met Akira as well, because when I had met him when I was there the first time, he was digging out landmines somewhere in the country. So when I came back, I started taking pictures in what I felt was the only way I could photograph them. I'm mostly a portrait photographer now, and I take people in what I believe is the most dignified way to photograph them, in usually their Sunday clothes, well, not always, but in a proper style. And I wanted to do the same with these young people. I wanted them to be looking very heroic, proud, and dignified, and I wanted them to look directly into the camera so that when I bring the pictures back to Canada, the viewers in Canada could actually be eye to eye with them. I then decided to make the exhibition practically life-size. So the images that are in the Canadian International School right now are almost life-size images, so that a young Canadian or a young viewer of any country, or a not-so-young viewer at that, for that matter, could actually look at these children and say, look, these are perfectly normal people, except they're missing parts of their body, and I am normal. Beside each image is a little story of what happened to the person and what their goals are in life. I wanted to especially stress that they have as much aspirations and hopes as any child and any person anywhere in the world would have. And I realized that was important because these kind of hopes can, thanks to Akira, now be fulfilled. As he said, Chet is one of the boys who was a really troubled street kid living in squalor and dirt, has now a career, as Akira forgot to tell or didn't want to say. Chet is now about 18 or 19 years old and has a girlfriend, and she would like to get married to him, but she said, you have to get a job first. And this would not have happened had he not had an education. He probably might not even be alive if he had not been in a proper arranged kind of situation. One of the most striking things that I found was that, as I told you earlier, I have not been to Cambodia in 3 years. What is so discouraging to see is when you see people in touristy places in Angkor Wat and so on, with the most hideous injured body parts of them that were all injuries of landmines, often very badly stitched and sewn up, often not by proper doctors, sometimes by some father who finished cutting a leg off and trying to fix it up as much as he could before he could get to a hospital with his child. So sometimes these people now grown up, their only way to make a living is to go and beg and be in touristed places and flaunt these hideous injuries into your face, which is really hard to look at, and you give them money mostly just to not have to look at it much longer. So one day, Huck went into town with me, and usually he would walk around on crutches with his, it's hot there, and he would have like this exposed stump hanging out from his pants. And he would, but this time when he said he wanted to come into town with me, and he wanted to put on, so he came and put on his artificial limb. And I said, oh, Huck, you have an artificial limb. And he said, yeah, but it doesn't fit me very well, because often what happens when children grow up, it needs to be changed with every growth spurt that they have. So it didn't fit him really that well. And he said, you know, I can walk maybe about a kilometer, but then it starts to bleed, the wound. So but I said, but still, you're walking into town with your artificial limb. And he said, yeah, I don't want to look different than other people. And I thought that was the great success of the school. He had regained his dignity. He knew he had a future. He could do something else than beg and show this grotesquely cut leg to the world to get some living. And that is thanks to Akira, who has actually achieved so much. He has right now probably 25 children living there. Some of them have graduated. My friend Huck, who also took me to his home one day, he took many times tourists to his home, and it was quite delightful to see how his family lived. Huck is now selling souvenirs and has actually a real job. He's being paid. He's selling souvenirs for some supplier and is making some living. When I met him, he also had a girlfriend, and I was hoping that maybe by now he's married. I'll have to find out from Akira what's happened to Huck in the last 3 years. Anyway, that is my story. My purpose for this exhibition was in Canada and anywhere it's been at this point. It's traveled throughout universities in Canada, some 20 universities and high schools. It's been in Spain and Slovenia and England, where my friend Jackie Russell saw it and decided that when she and her husband moved to Hong Kong, it would be great to show it here. So it leads me to my other real goal of this exhibition. It is to educate young people not only about how other people in the world live, but to educate them a little bit about the landmines treaty that Canada has invited countries 12 years ago to sign. At this point, there are still three major countries that have not signed the landmines treaty. When I recently was in Boston at a university, the professors there who put together a similar discussion group, they pointed out very strongly that unfortunately America is one of the countries that has not signed it, and so are China and Russia. There are some minor players in the world, but these powerful countries, I would like young people to encourage their governments to encourage other governments to sign this landmines treaty eventually. It would be of great support to people in Cambodia. Right now, Afghanistan will probably be the next country that will be terribly polluted by landmines. Iraq is probably right now polluted. There are terrible situations with anti-personnel landmines in Colombia. It is an ongoing problem. And as you all know, landmines will never die. They will never die. They can live up to 100 years. So it is shocking to me that we all stand by and look at this world where innocent people like Cambodians, who don't even know anything about the war, that 30 year of conflict and war, that these people should be suffering now from an instrument of war that is forever staying in the ground, unless somebody like Akira, and yes, other organizations also, can make a great effort and a greater effort to clear landmines. His organization is entirely self-funded through donations, through a foundation. That is Bill Morse, that is right now talking somewhere else. It is an imperative that Cambodia gets rid of landmines as soon as possible. You can ask him personally, if we have time for some Q&A, that it is Cambodia's government thinks it might take another 20 years. That is depending on if enough financing is there. the government itself does what they can, I believe. But I think it is, of course, also the responsibility of foreign countries to support NGOs of various countries, and there are several. His is relatively small. He's actually concentrating right now with his 10 people on areas that are what's called low priority, where there might be 25 families in a village that can simply not work the land because they cannot go out because it's not safe. And so many times, families like that, they will send members of the family into Phnom Penh, and they will there work on garbage dumps, clear garbage, and for recycling. They try anything to feed a family, and as you've noticed in the, on the, one of the DVDs, the average wage of a person in Cambodia is $30 a month. You can't actually live there. You cannot live at all, for not even in Cambodia. He pays his staff, his 10 people, much better. Again, thanks to the donations that he receives from various people in the world. We actually had a huge success in Hong Kong with people. We had we raised money with the Canadian International School. Jackie arranged a fantastic flashy dinner. I'm sure Akira has never seen such elegant surroundings, and he was thrilled. We did quite well. Anyway, this is all. They want to go home, but the door is locked. They can't go anyway.
Thank you very much for
that. Thank you.
And just like to go into the Q&A session. Jackie, you mentioned earlier that I think out of 1 month, Akira spends something like 25 days of the month in the field demining. So we're actually very privileged to have him here. Really good opportunity for us to ask some questions. So with that, I'd like you to identify yourself and your organization and go ahead with your questions. Hello.
My name is Nadine from South China Morning Post. Hello. Hi. Can I ask you what you were feeling and thinking as you were about to defuse a mine?
When I cleared a mine?
Yes.
What I feeling?
What are you thinking?
Now I feel very happy to help make my country safe. And I am not afraid from the landmine.
When you were there, what were you feeling? Can you remember how it felt to be defusing
when
a mine?
When I am young or now?
Both.
Now I like to do clear landmine. I like to do the good thing because before I do bad thing, now I change.
Are you afraid?
Not afraid, no. Yeah.
Tom?
Akira, I just want to ask two simple questions. The landmines that you clear, where were they made? Were most made in China or the U.S. or Russia?
From Russia and Vietnam, China, and some from America, Czechoslovakia, and East Germany.
And how did you learn to defuse the mine? Because I guess it's very easy to place a mine, but to take it out and dismantle, did somebody teach you or did you learn yourself?
Yeah, I learned from the army, from Khmer Rouge, from Vietnamese in 1985. So I understand all kind of mine bomb in Cambodia, even 500-pound bomb, 1,000-pound bomb, or a cluster bomb. I clear many every year. I put in my museum.
Thank you, Michel Jospé. If you compare the way you defuse bombs today with what you were doing 5 or 10 years ago, has the technique evolved? Are you still obliged to demine them one by one, or can you just and do you have to do it by hand? Is there any other techniques which would prevent people from getting hurt when they demine the bombs, they defuse the bombs?
Yeah, all my friends that I teach, or Cambodian army that I teach, they are clear landmine, they never injured. And my old way, I just go to clear in the big area that have many landmines easy to find, not clear by square meter like now. And all landmine or bomb in Cambodia, it's easy to clear, to find, and save, and cheap for me by the old way.
But are there the machines available? Is that what you want to know? If there are like larger machines or tools available, or do you still have to do it? Like you cannot use a big tank or a demining machine. You need to do it by hand, right?
Yeah, we use by metal detector. Big machine cannot use in the jungle, many big tree in Cambodia. So we have to cut by scissor grass. And the rule now in Cambodia have to work, follow the rule is wear the protection helmet armor and use metal detector. And when we find the mine, we dig and put the explosive nearby the mine and check around. We go far away, few hundred meters, and then we blow up, destroy it in situ, not defuse. But my old way before, I don't have any support. I defuse 99%. Because landmine or bomb, when we be defuse, some mine only few minutes, one mine I can defuse. Take TNT or take small detonator out from the mine, I put in my pocket. Even 100 or 1,000 detonator, it's okay. Detonator very small, we can touch, we can play a little bit, but to hit it, to burn it, explode, only lose the here, the arm. But if we put together with the TNT, strong explode, or we want stronger, we can put the metal or rock around the hard thing, become a fragment when it explodes, can kill many people. For me, I take detonator out, burn few meters away from me in the hole. I can throw all detonator in the hole. It just explodes like we shoot the AK gun. It's not dangerous to me. And the TNT left in the mine or in the bomb, we just burn like a wood fire. It's not explode. So all kind of mine or bomb made from wood, plastic, TNT, safety pin, firing pin, it's same, but different only color, big or small. It's, we know it's not difficult, it's easy and not dangerous.
And how many people are now participating to the demining of those bombs in the country? I mean, you have got a team of 10 people, but other people are also doing the same
have
job.
Many thousand people in Cambodian work, clear landmine. Other NGO, Helotra, CMAG, MAG, yeah, and my NGO.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I'd just like to ask a question myself. What about from the future, looking forward, what are the next steps that you see as important for continuing this demining activity? How can we, and maybe Tony, you could jump in on this as well, how can we sort of escalate the demining activities and clear the mines more rapidly?
Well, I learned this all over the last few days from Bill Morse. How many hundred millions of landmines are in the world? 100 million landmines in the world right now. So at the rate we're going, Bill would say, it could take another 100 years to clear all the landmines in the world. There are many, many countries affected by landmines. Cambodia happens to be the third worst polluted landmine country. So the rate of we're going is not going as fast as, if you did some economic growth kind of comparisons, it wouldn't match, I don't think. It should be going faster. When you think of the infrastructure that is destroyed and the possibility of livelihood for so many people in the world, it isn't fast enough. Is that answering your question?
Tony, I just wanted to ask the politics of this. I think the U.S. is opposed to a landmine ban because of the Korean Peninsula. I was also surprised that you only cited one exhibition, the recent one in Massachusetts, in terms of taking to this U.S. Have you had any luck taking it to State Department or the military and having discussions with sympathetic officials?
Good question. We actually, when I started this exhibition, I traveled somewhat under the auspices of Lloyd Axworthy, who was the foreign affairs minister in Canada, who invited the world's nations to the landmine treaty. And it's so I traveled it throughout Canada, and actually most of the other things sort of evolved on in other countries, evolved on their own. These exhibitions and these awareness programs that I'm trying to put together. I have had only one show in the United States now, but we are having a pretty good climate right now with a pretty interesting president, so we're hoping that we will definitely keep it in the United States. We have actually two exhibitions that are exactly the same. We actually have three exhibitions now because Ms. Russell actually had printed another exhibition that is now in Chinese language, and we can now travel it to certainly some Chinese-speaking countries. I know there's differences in language. We are planning to go as far as we can in the United States to mostly bring an awareness to people. It was really interesting in Boston how people reacted, to how the students reacted. They were quite interested in wanting to help, and I have maybe persuaded one or two classrooms to maybe write letters to Obama. I said, I'm sure somebody will open the letters for him, and maybe he'll get this some... And he knows about it, and everybody in America knows about it, but we don't think about it. It's me in Canada. I never thought about it. That, yeah.
Well, President Obama has a Nobel Peace Prize he has to earn now, right?
So it's excellent planning.
But have you ever had a conversation with someone at the State Department or an administration official or a Pentagon official about this and shown?
One of the discussions we had, and I wish I was not so old and remember the name, there was a very important man who was in the Clinton government who came to York University in Toronto, who led the panel discussion, and the Korea situation was brought up because it was, I think, during Clinton that he was approached to sign the landmines agreement finally, and that was the stumbling block Korea was. And it may still be the stumbling block for some time, but one can hope that it goes. We're working on it now to get it. There's a new... ambassador to Canadian ambassador to Washington, and I think he's a friend of a friend, and so I'm working on we're working on getting it to Washington. It's a large country, and to as far as population is concerned, so it could take us another 2 or 3 years to just show it to some major universities in America. But that's the goal. We also have the goal to bring it maybe to Singapore, since we have this exhibition now here. So I have one exhibition that I'm hoping to continue to travel in Europe, one exhibition to continue to travel in America, and one exhibition with the Chinese text. And we have already an interest from the Foreign Affairs, Foreign Correspondents Club in Tokyo. Just got an email, so we might get it with their help to Tokyo. There's lots to be done, and my little goal is, it was a little exhibition of 16 images of landmines injured children, and I just wanted, I use it as a catalyst to let people see what happened. I'm talking too much also. My wife sent me away for that reason.
Any more questions? Please.
Jackie Russell, so I was involved in this coming to Hong Kong, but can you just explain the two NGOs that you have set up and have people running for you, just so people can distinguish what we call the Cambodian Landmine Museum, which is a slight misnomer, and the Cambodian Self-Help Demining, just so people understand the two separate NGOs that you have set up.
Yeah, I have two NGO. One is for demining, and one is a landmine museum that for help the children. So I would like invite all of you, if you go to visit to Cambodia, please visit the Cambodian Landmine Museum. Yeah, thank you very much.
I guess what he's really saying, I love when he says it's a museum. Don't misunderstand this. The children are not on display like objects. The children are actually now, they were housed somewhat within the museum grounds when I first encountered them, but they are now housed quite separately from the museum, where they have schooling, where they have actually a health practitioner there, so that if they're sick, they have now a car to take them to the hospital if there's something wrong. So they are, the children are at the museum, but they're not on display. So it's actually a refuge and a residence for landmines injured children. They also get after school, they go to regular school in Siem Reap, and they also have sort of basically homework help when they have two teachers and now a third one coming to help the children grow in their educational, in their scholastic skills.
Okay, well, that's it. We're out of time. Thank you very much to both our speakers today. Thank you for joining us here at the club. And I'd just like to give you a token of our gratitude for joining us today. Thank you very much. Thank you.